You're listening to Octahedron, episode 8, podcast about systems and protocols without centralized ownership. And today is the 19th of July 2017, and today in a studio we have no guests. We have zero guests this time.
Yeah, it's only you and me.
Yes. So we're going to be
talking. And we don't have any list of topics, right?
Can you send me the link? No, we don't have that. Sorry. We have a list of topics, which is like one big topic is okay. ICOs and crowd sales and token sales, crowdfunding campaigns and this stuff. And yeah. I need a straw because I can't drink otherwise. Yeah.
Sorry. I have to admit that I found ICOs so far totally boring and totally uninteresting, and but everybody's doing it apparently. There must be something to it. So what is it that makes it appealing for people to do an ICO, and what makes it appealing for people to
buy into it?
Yeah.
Well, exactly. I have to say that I was very late to even understand what ICO stands for, because I was always, even though like long after I was following Ethereum and all this crypto stuff, I still was ignoring this word ICO. Everything I heard of was always referred as a crowdfunding or crowd sale.
Because when I heard about ICOs, I heard about it when various altcoins came into being and people wanted to promote their altcoin with an initial coin offering. I mean, that's what it means, right?
Yeah, initial coin offering.
If it would be a token offering, it would be ITO.
Yeah, but I absolutely ignored this term. And then I finally ended up in a startup who recently started and not yet completed a token sale.
Oh, really? You're not even done yet?
No. So here's the story. I'm now working on a project which is called DAO Casino, and we issued a token, and we were publicly distributing this token, and that's the first time I'm actually a part of a team doing a token sale, and it's still ongoing. And before,
so you don't have enough money yet?
Well, the way it works, I guess the listeners would know, we issued a token on Ethereum, that's what everyone's doing. Maybe I should start from the beginning.
Yeah, do that.
Because as the history goes, about a year ago, a bit over a year ago, we were doing the first episode of Octahedron, and we did some predictions. It was shortly after the DAO Goxed. And we predicted a Cambrian explosion of token sales and ICOs. And now we're living through this Cambrian explosion, and I'm actually thinking that we're not even in the middle of it. Because I was thinking a couple of months ago when there was like, what is called, there was this token, Aragon token, there was this Bancor, there was Ant token, this basic attention token, everyone was launching tokens.
Okay, I only heard about the Gnosis token. That was the only token that reached me.
Yeah, so basically the tokens were really coming one after another. And like a year ago, if you did a crypto meetup, you had to check if in the same city, there will be no other two conferences about blockchains and stuff like that going. And now if you launch your own token sale, or some people call it ICO, but I prefer token sale, and I think depending on your white paper, it's what your lawyers will prefer to call it. So you really have to check whether you're not launching at the same time.
Well, you probably do launch. I mean, and you don't have to. It's not enough to check only the city you live in.
You check the whole worldwide.
World. Yeah, because and those tokens are sold worldwide.
So to us it was weird because I think just the day after Tezos launched their token sale.
I don't even know what Tezos is.
Tezos is some kind of... It's like no one keeping track of that anymore.
Okay, and so it's irrelevant.
There was also Eternity token launch, and like every week there is a new token, and some tokens, like I think last year it was a big thing.
Okay, but still, I have two questions. Why do people do token sales, and why do people participate in buying tokens? What about your the token sale of your company? Why are you doing it?
Well, there are two answers. There's a dark, greedy answer about raising capital really easily.
Okay, yeah.
Which is well, not really easily.
Well, it's also not very greedy. I mean, that's what all companies do, right?
Yeah, but it's like raising capital in other ways than
the
asking,
official,
yeah, asking VCs or...
Like an IPO, like a cheaper IPO.
Yeah, well, I don't like when ICOs and IPOs are compared, okay. Because I think it's, first of all, it's, well, not just because it puts people in trouble, because basically in an IPO, you promise some return on investment and you're actually selling shares, as far as I understand.
Yeah, you sell shares, but do you promise anything?
If you print tokens, you don't promise anything.
Okay.
And you don't sell shares, because if you promise something like dividends and return on investment and you, you're basically selling shares, then you get in trouble.
I mean, to find people to pay for it, you have to promise something. Maybe not what is promised in an IPO, but you have to... I mean, Gnosis, for example, promised that if you have their tokens, you will get a certain amount of fees covered per year. Like, of per
fees
month,
of
even.
Using
fees of
their,
in
system.
Their system. Yeah,
I think that, as far as I understood, there is like a difference between what everyone's struggling with. It's easy to just print tokens and promise people return on investment, but what you really need to do is to make sure that the token is functional. And that's what everyone's doing. If the token has a function, which is other than sit in someone's wallet and...
Yeah.
And bring people dividends.
But that's the minimum, right? To sit in the wallet. Like, there's a standard for this ERC-20?
Yeah, and I heard it's like...
And that means that you can put it in a wallet and then you can interact with it in a minimalistic way. Probably you can sell it and buy it.
Yeah, but you can't even promise that. Because, like, as a person who...
That's not part of ERC-20. That you can sell it and buy it?
Yeah, you can sell it and buy it, and you can move it.
Yeah.
It's a part of... Well, here's the weird thing, right? This technology offers... Like, the technology allows to do whatever you want with it, but as a company, you can't say, oh, this token will be traded on exchanges. You can't,
yeah, can't
say...
know that, yeah.
Well, first of all, you can't know that, and secondly, if you promise people that the token will be traded... You sort of
imply
that it might go up in price, and then you kind of offering. Everyone is so paranoid, but I think everyone is less paranoid than before.
Okay. Yeah.
Because what I noticed, like a year ago, if you would sit with some traditional VCs, but let's say advanced enough to talk about crypto stuff. They wouldn't even say the word ICO or crowd sale. They would just be scared of it because it's, oh, unlisted securities, illegal. And now everyone just openly talks about tokens and actually openly talking about buying tokens and holding tokens of different
companies.
It has
been normalized.
It has been normalized, but it still haven't been like properly regulated.
Yeah. Well, it isn't regulated at all, right?
Well, it kind of is, because I think if you blatantly offer securities, unlisted securities...
Okay, then you will have the SEC on your back.
Yes, and the way it's regulated, for instance, or at least people self-regulate themselves, you sort of don't sell to American citizens. But
New York citizens, right? They are the problem.
I think it's all U.S. citizens.
Yeah? They don't
well,
get...
Well, I can tell you what we've done. We just don't sell to U.S. citizens.
Okay.
So, well, we don't block the website from them, but if they tick... It's also kind of weird. They just have to tick a box that they're not an American citizen. So,
okay.
Then if it's an American citizen who ticked a box that he's not or she is not an American citizen, and they go to court because they expected this token going to make them rich, and it didn't, and they get angry, then you can probably waive... this terms
can
and conditions.
Okay, and say your participation was illegal because
yeah,
you lied,
so it's your fault. Yeah.
I don't think that this will really work, but on the other hand, I don't think you will be sued. So it probably
I think no one still. I'm talking like from a really dark perspective. The reason why no one actually got sued is because all the shitcoins were going up.
Really, all of them?
I think so. Okay. I mean, well, some tokens went down. Obviously, some tokens died. But overall, people who tend to buy tokens, and usually, I think the category of people who buy tokens, they usually hold a bunch of them. So there will be one coin that just dies, and then all your portfolio, if you have normally, if you have like diverse portfolio of 25 coins, then overall you just, for the past year, you've been just getting stinking rich.
This really
sounds, just made a lot of happy people.
Sounds to me like it is really unregulated securities.
Well, it's not really, because
and
if it's
only because Bitcoin goes up, everything else also goes up and everybody is happy. But as soon as the bubble bursts, there will be tears
and
lawyers.
People. Yes, there will be a lot of unhappy people. And the weird thing is, well, I don't think that it's securities, because is Bitcoin a security?
No, because there's no company.
Yeah, but if there is a company that builds something which is a bit like Bitcoin, then it's a functional token that actually powers the system.
I mean, I think the courts have to decide this.
Well,
I'm not a lawyer. I don't even know what exactly a security is.
I
but
think
it looks like it's unregulated. That's for sure. It's not.
It's semi-regulated, kind of. I think it's really, yeah, it's dangerous area to start even talking about whether tokens are securities or not, because tokens are just a new financial instrument and it doesn't have a name yet.
Okay, so sorry, I'm too loud. So one reason is for the company to sell these tokens to get investment.
Well, dark reason is to get investment.
What's the other reason? To get popularity?
And the bright reason is that when you issue your tokens and you distribute them to people, you just create an army of loyal token holders that will just really say good things about your project. And
or sell their tokens and then say bad things about your project.
Yeah, but you do have this weird segment that a company just doesn't have usually. I mean, and then
okay.
And then, well, another reason to
they have an incentive to help your company because they think their tokens will be worth more.
Yes, but there is also a third reason, which is actually a real reason that people have to pay attention to, is most of the systems that issue tokens and sell tokens, they actually introduce an economic, rather closed or semi-closed economic system where this token does something.
Yeah, what does it for your company, for example?
Well, for our company, it's an in-game currency, obviously, because it's a...
Ah, you play with it.
You play with it in games that people connecting to this system.
Okay.
And
there's more than one game. I have no idea what your company is doing.
Well, I can actually... I've been talking about our project so much, so maybe I'll keep it till the end. So, and on the other hand, it also a reward system. Like, for instance, if there is an affiliate program, the affiliate program will also be powered by this token. So it's a currency that circulates inside a certain system.
Okay.
So you can't say that if you issue a security as a company, and I don't know, you sell buns, you can't just do stuff with the securities. You can trade them.
Yeah.
Or let's say Golem has a functional token. This token will be used by machines essentially to render, let's say, to buy processing power, right?
I don't know the Golem project too.
Well, Golem is about decentralized computer, but not as in Ethereum. It's about decentralized market for computing power.
Okay.
So I want to render a lot of porn, and I just go on the open market, and I offer, and these deals, they happen in this token. So if I want to participate in this economy, I need this token.
And they have a way to verify that the pawn was rendered.
Yeah, and it's somehow randomness is involved.
Okay. So it's fully automatic. I put in whatever needs to be computed, and I get it out, and there's some kind of proof that they really computed it, and
they just randomly get
this token.
There is some random way to check different segments of this, and
I do not doubt that at all.
Well, I'm not sure if it's not ready yet, but that's theoretically.
It's not working.
I don't think so. I think the beta version is up and running, but I'm not sure.
Nice
so,
name, Golem.
Yeah, and they have this. I actually did a podcast with them when they started the crowd sale. So they were the. I think Golem was the first project I came across that closed in like 19 seconds or something like that, or maybe 19 minutes.
Okay.
And I was doing a podcast with them, asking them, saying, "Oh, let's not pump your coin, let's just talk about technology, blah blah blah." So we spoke about technology, and then I wake up next day and the tokens are gone, and I wanted to actually buy some. So in 20 minutes they sold their tokens worth of like 19 million bucks. Okay.
So they are funded now.
They are funded for the rest of their lives, because since then Ether back then was like 20 bucks or something like
and
that.
And they have received Ether,
and they didn't dump it. So
it's at least 10 times.
So it's just crazy. So anyway, now they have to build this shit. But what I'm saying is...
what happens if they don't build it? Can they pay back their token investors?
No, nothing happens. Because in their disclaimer, and every time you tick a box and stuff, it says it's experimental software built on top of an experimental software.
If we can't do it, then we keep the money.
Well, we can just waste all the money, and there is... Until there is money, we'll keep trying, but we can't promise you anything.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is when you write like a white paper or whatever, some kind of document that explains, well, we decided not to put the token sale stuff in the white paper because it's just rude, because white paper is supposed to be about tech and about the project, not about like buy my coin or something. So we just did it as like a separate document. And then lawyers were checking it, and even, for instance, I had a sentence there that I wrote, like, the legal entity that we set up is responsible for delivering and maintaining this protocol, and...
Even that was crossed out.
And I think someone said, responsible is a bad word. Say, this...
a bad word.
Yeah, this legal entity is set to maintain and to try to do stuff, yeah.
Okay.
So you really have to be careful about what kind of promises you give to people.
Okay.
So right now, no...
So actually, if you really believe someone is going to do what they say, then it makes sense to invest in their coin. But if you have any doubt at all, and you can't use the coin for anything until they have built what they promised to... It makes no sense to buy coins. I mean, for your project, it makes sense because you can play those games. So you buy like for $1 or for $10, and then you play, and then you see you lose, and then you don't buy again, or you win, and then you buy again.
No, but the whole system is still not ready.
But for Golem, your system is also not working.
Well, we have a beta. We have like an MVP. But the thing is, if you did build the system already, why the hell you need 15 million? Just give people tokens, and it's open source software.
Well, software's never done.
Yes, okay, but it's sort of rude to say that we just want like 15 million just to like get rid of some bugs and add some features and, you know, like pink screens on mobile or something. I think, what do I think? I think it's okay if something is not ready.
Yeah, I think so too. But if I don't believe that these people can do it, because I think maybe they are not the right people to do something, or maybe I know for some reason that it's technically totally infeasible what they are promising, or I believe that it's not possible.
That's not how it works, because it's like in my experience, it's weird because there are rational, really rational people they just buy a lot of random tokens that like barely might work. But, well, intelligent people that people I consider intelligent, they say they look at the team. They look
at the people, right.
They look at the team. They look at the code on GitHub. They already have some kind of MVP. Mm. Because if a team didn't build anything at all, maybe they're great people, but maybe they won't be able to work together. And if a software developer can't even develop like a little MVP, it means just like a bunch of lazy people or whatever. But there are tons of irrational people who just buy tokens, any tokens. And they would like, so there are...
Wait, first you said there are rational people who buy tokens left and right, and now there are also irrational people who buy tokens left and right.
So there are rational people who buy tokens when they see the team, they see that they can probably deliver, and they deliver something, and then they diversify and they buy a lot of tokens, but I don't think that they will analyze... It's not like they will absolutely fall in love with a particular team and buy all their tokens.
Okay, so they buy everything just to be diverse.
Yeah.
Or to be, if 10 fail, the 11th will maybe be a success.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's the only strategy, because even if you have...
Well, my strategy is to not buy anything.
Well, it used to be a good strategy when Ether was going up, right?
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, I bought some Ether. That's true.
Yeah, but I mean, when Ether was going up, and then people, there were all these tokens coming up, but then if you just sit on your Ether, it makes more sense than just buy tokens.
Ah, you mean as long as Ether goes up faster than any token, it just doesn't make sense to buy tokens.
And I don't really buy tokens, not because, first of all, I don't have a lot of spare money to spend, and I consider it gambling.
Yeah.
So if I don't have a lot of money to spend... Well, if I tell myself I will stop smoking and I will stop buying cigarettes, and what I spend on cigarettes I can spend on tokens, that makes sense, right? But I don't buy tokens because I can't... Well, sometimes I actually buy tokens, but I find it a pain in the ass to actually calculate whether they're going up.
Yeah, well, I think also I would need the time to evaluate them before buying... And I just don't have the time to look at all these projects. I mean, there are hundreds, probably, I guess.
Yeah, there are hundreds of them. And then also...
And how would I know which are good? I mean...
I identified, like, let's say, two strategies that people do when they launch the token. Or it's more than two. So one strategy is to have carpet bombardment marketing. No one cares whether your repository is open. You just buy as many banners as you can. And and you really like market the shit out of it, and you still can raise millions. Mm. Or you can be a bit smarter and be a bit more, I don't know, elegant. And you can release an MVP. You can talk to cool guys, and maybe they want to be your advisors. And obviously, like... it's hard to get like a cool advisor, but also unfortunately I have to say that maybe having like, I don't know, Vitalik's face on your website as an advisor or someone from Ethereum Foundation, that will be really helpful.
Yeah,
so it's also a marketing strategy.
I think they will not do that. I think Vitalik announced publicly that he does not advise for any coin. I mean, he said it differently on Twitter, but apparently somebody used his face and he didn't like that because he wasn't an advisor for them.
He just
helped them maybe, or they talked and then they put them up as their advisor. And he was really unhappy about it, which I totally can understand.
That's kind of crazy.
So he publicly announced that he's not an advisor for anything.
Oh, that's really good, actually, because I saw his face on quite a few websites, and I thought, oh my god, like Vitalik sold out, he's now advisor on all the scammy projects. But actually scammy projects just like take his picture and put
it
there.
So I can, if we do the show notes, I will pick I will find this tweet. I think he said in general he does not advise anyone, and who says otherwise is lying. He didn't say that, but that's what I
Yeah, but there are still a lot of famous people. You just need someone who, like, work for Ethereum Foundation or S-Core or whatever, and if they want
to... Yeah, they have really have to be careful what they say, and probably the really outstanding or famous people should just do the same and say, I do not advise anyone. If they say so, then they are lying, and especially I do not encourage anyone to buy anything.
Yeah, but then again, Gavin, for instance, I think he does advise or did advise Melonport.
Okay.
And it was like an open official collaboration. But I'm not pretty sure whether they're still working together, but I think Melonport somehow supposed to be using Polkadot or something.
Is it a scam? No.
Melonport doesn't seem to be scam to me.
Yeah.
But it's a fine line. It's like, how do you define scam? You can
a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, I mean, there are some obnoxious, obvious scams, but if someone want to deliver software and maybe it's very complicated...
And, yeah.
I actually liked what Eternity guys said, even though I have to admit I didn't look at their technology and their idea that much. They said that their stuff will be only up and running like not next year January, but the January after or something like that.
2019?
I think so.
That's why.
But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's 18. But this is kind of realistic.
Hmm.
So, yeah, there is one strategy is just absolute carpet bombardment, and you can, and this has a certain price. You just buy every banner.
On Reddit,
on like, I don't know, whenever you can. There was a project that I probably shouldn't name if I don't want to get in trouble. But anyway, there was a project
OneCoin?
No.
Okay.
Some crypto token project. And once I checked out the website and I could not surf internet unless I was in porn mode, without seeing them everywhere. I couldn't see any tweets anymore because they really invaded my computer. And they, like with some cookie stuff.
They didn't on
and it's like, it's really, I have to say that I have to brag about my project. At some point, we had some...
What was your strategy?
Well, the strategy was first to build an MVP, do a little bit of advertisement here and there, but mostly go to like meetups and conferences and do it a bit more strategically.
Talk about this stuff.
But we did have, first we had a guy who joined as like a marketing guy, and he was like good at internet marketing, and he was like, guys, you're too shy. Just like, I'm just like, dude, our white paper is not ready yet. Yeah, just like banners all the time. Like send out emails.
Did you have the money? I mean, marketing can be really expensive.
I think the average, like, if you want like a marketing carpet bombardment marketing for your ICO without having nothing, with just one website, no white paper, team made of like your neighbors and stuff, you can spend about $70,000 on marketing, maybe more, maybe 100, and then you're gonna close and raise like $15 million. It's possible, and it's sad, but it is possible. And on the other hand, there will be people doing this token design, so it makes sense, and they're writing white papers, and they're writing code, and they're making MVPs, and they're still gonna raise like $15 million or something.
Hmm.
So
it's cheaper to not have anything.
Well, the crazy thing is, so I always wanted to say to everyone is like, look at the, if token makes sense, is like some tokens, like tokens are just economies, right? They represent access to something. Like in any economy or ecosystem, a token can represent access to something. Like they can be an economy of, I don't know, tickets, tube tickets, or they can be an economy of, what is Bitcoin if it's not a security, right? It essentially just represents access to the network of sending money fast. And this token...
You pay enough fees.
Well, it's not like a huge fee. It's still less than...
Well, it was...
It was high. Well, I never paid more than €2 or something, and I still got my transactions confirmed.
Yeah, but if you pay €2 for a €2 transaction, that's 100%. No, 15%.
Yeah, but no one... Well, I mean, okay...
Well, I paid 10% for a Club Mate. I paid 16 cents of fees.
Well, if you're thinking in percents, then it makes sense. But then you can pay same 2 euros and send 2 million
yeah.
in one go, right?
I could, but I want to use this for everyday transactions and not...
Yeah.
But anyway, I digress.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is that Bitcoin... Well, it's kind of people imagine it as a coin, but really it's access to the network that people use to send money. It's like...
Yeah, I mean, it's access to a network to send money without anyone who can interfere with it. I mean, you can be sure that you can send the money from A to B.
Uncensored.
And uncensored, yeah. No
yeah,
government.
So it's a censorship-free network that you can use, like internet, for sending money. So the Bitcoin itself represents, well, it does kind of represent money at the same time, and it represents access to the network that is used to send money. So with any token is the same. It's sort of, well, it can represent access to this particular system. So if you
for example, your casino or, for example, Gnosis, the prediction market, but if I don't want access to your casino or the prediction market, then I don't need this coin, right?
Yeah, but the weird thing is that most people who would buy these tokens, they will buy them because they want to speculate them. And this is like
not
hard
truth. Because
truth.
They want access to your system. They think these will go up and that's why they buy them.
Yes.
Okay, then maybe they deserve to be disappointed.
Well, I think if people gamble, they should be aware
of
it.
The bank always wins.
But the weird thing is like, I was naive. I just thought, like, I participated in creating this white paper, and I participated in sort of making this token work, like, theoretically, making sure that it sort of circulates around the system. So the token is used in games, plus... people who bring new people to the games also get this token. They can maybe give it to the players and so on. And then there is some of the rewards go to the developer and it's all automatic and everyone gets money somehow. So it just circulates within an ecosystem, within a value chain.
But it doesn't get more. How are these tokens created?
Well, every token has, like, some tokens are limited quantity, and some tokens are unlimited, and some tokens people just print over and over and over again. They have like different rounds, which is fine as well, but I think most common will be you deploy a contract on Ethereum, which is this
you were not talking about your company doing all three sorts.
No, it's like the same token.
Yeah, because you were mixing up stuff there. So what does your company have? How are the tokens created that your company issues?
So it's a...
Or the company you work for.
Yeah, it's a pretty much a standard... Well, it's not so standard because they all have a little bit of customization. It's a crowdfunding contract on Ethereum and with ERC-20 module, or I don't know how it looks... in code. Yeah. I mean, I've seen it, I just can't read
no,
it.
No, I'm totally
and
fine with
what it
in general.
So what it does is, once it's deployed, people start sending Ether to it, and whatever address send Ether to this contract issues a balance of a certain token to this address. So the same address now holding these tokens. And the tokens are really...
Wait a second. So this contract, from my address, I send Ether to a certain function in this contract.
Yes.
And let's say I send one Ether and a token has a price. Let's assume there's a fixed price. I don't know if that's really...
Well, I can describe how we did it.
Yeah.
Like the first day, you get 2,000 tokens for one Ether.
Okay.
And then a few days later, it's like becomes 1,800, and then it becomes
so
less
get
and less.
Less token per time passed.
Yes.
Okay, but fully automatically. So I send one Ether now, I get 2,000 tokens on my account within this contract.
Yeah, because, well, this ERC-20 then just knows, this contract knows that you have this balance.
Yeah, but it's within this contract. There is nothing sent back to me. It's just that this contract now writes to the storage that my address has this balance of tokens.
I think so, yeah.
Well, that's probably a way
because
to do it.
I think that's how ERC-20 works.
Okay, and if I sell, then I call another function in this contract.
And then you move this token to another address, and this balance is now associated with a different address.
So, but there two things have to happen, right? One is I'm allowed to move these tokens to a different address.
Well, in our case, you're only allowed to move them after the token sale is over.
Okay, and when will it be over?
So the way it's programmed, it's either over when we reached a cap, or it's over...
A million tokens or something like that?
It's in ether.
A certain number?
It's in ether. It's like, I forgot actually what the cap was. It's like... Oh, I have to check it.
Anyway, it's a certain amount of ether.
It's a certain amount of ether.
Received, okay.
If the contract receives this ether, the contract just doesn't receive any more ether. And if you're going to keep sending, it's just
you don't get tokens.
No, it stops receiving ether.
Is that possible?
I think so.
Okay.
So you can't just send... You can't send ether.
You probably still have to pay the gas to send ether to it, but you will...
But the ether are not...
You might get back to the ether, except for the gas price.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So this token, this contract stops at one point. And after it's done... Well, this could take forever, right?
Well, okay. So you have a cap, and if you never reach the cap, it just stops either after a certain amount of blocks, or I think it can also check the timestamp or something.
Okay.
So you can say in 27 days, it just stops receiving money.
And for your special contract, do you know when it will stop?
It will stop on the 27th, I think.
Of
so this
July.
Month. Yeah, in a week or something like that.
It's not far in the future.
Yeah, but now it's like it's a bit slow because obviously the last week is that you get very little tokens for your ether.
So the incentive is not very high to buy. Okay, wait, I'm not done. So I have some tokens registered to my address, let's put it this way, and now the sale is over and I could sell my tokens. How does it work? I don't sell it to this contract, right? I must find a buyer.
Well, usually what happens is all these tokens get listed on exchanges. On, like, Poloniex.
Yeah, but it must be possible to exchange these tokens without an exchange.
Yeah, and when, for instance, when Golem was such a frenzy because it was really good project and people understood this decentralized market for computing power, it sort of really spoke to people, and I think it also had a great team because they were...
Had?
They still have.
Good. Okay.
Yeah, had. Because, basically all the Golem guys, they were really close to Ethereum teams, and then Alex Leverington joined them, so they were really strong on all points. So when people bought a lot of Golem tokens, GNT I think it's called, and then people wanted to trade so badly because, okay, I have to say that even though I can estimate that maybe 70-80% of people who actually bought GNT don't give a shit about Golem team, they just saw that it's kind of apparently a strong project and Golem can, like GNT can go up. So they wanted to trade straight away before...
Even there was software.
What?
Even before
well,
there was
before,
software.
Well, before the token got listed on exchanges.
Okay. Okay.
So someone started setting up exchanging contracts where you can trustlessly trade this GNT against Ether because people want to trade.
So how does this exchange contract work?
Well, that I'm not sure. It's like an exchange in...
Let's have a look at the ERC-20 contract. How can I tell? I can tell the contract to pass my tokens or some of them to someone else's address.
I guess so.
Okay, let's assume that.
That's actually a good question because I have really basic understanding of this ERC-20.
Okay, so we need someone. For one of our
Fabian, I think his name is, the guy who actually proposed this standard and described it, okay. like right now, if you want to read something online about ERC-20, or at least a few weeks ago, or a few months ago maybe, my timeline is fucked up. I shouldn't swear. So a few months ago, if you wanted to read about ERC-20, you would come across this huge thread on GitHub when someone opening an issue and discussing this ERC-20 thing. And since recently, I even saw some YouTube videos explaining what ERC-20 is and how it can be used. And then also recently, actually, Golem token is not ERC-20.
Because it precedes ERC-20?
No, it's ERC-20 existed back then, but they decided that ERC-20 is not a good token.
Not a good fit for them.
Yes, and because it has some... I forgot what... It has some pros and cons. And now, for instance, there is an ERC-23, which is backwards compatible with ERC-20, and it's supposed to be like a new thing. Like now, you don't talk about ERC-20, you talk about ERC-23, and it's like a cool thing. And I have to say that we really need a guest who will be able to explain how this shit works. Because all I understand that this is just balances, and this is some kind of a module within a contract or some kind of a function that you can include in any contract, and that will recognize either print this ERC balances or recognize these balances. So technically, if there is a particular ERC-20 token, I can set up a contract that recognizes this token, and then I can, by using these balances, I can interact with this contract and trigger certain behavior. So this can be decentralized exchange, like an escrow. Let's say
We can assume it's possible to do decentralized trading of ERC-20 tokens.
I think it's pretty... Well, the way I would imagine it, and I can allow myself to imagine shit, because, let's say you put, you create some kind of an escrow. Well, you have to trust this escrow, but let's say you trust it, and you send your tokens there, and they just sit there before someone sends some ether to this contract balance, and then this contract will automatically
execute
and send
in their favor.
Send the ether to you and the tokens to whoever wanted the tokens, but you will need to be able to obviously audit this contract because...
Well, I mean, I would bet that there is source code out there that is probably not too complicated that works as a proxy for this, so that you deploy this contract yourself with your own address as beneficiary. And then you tell someone, they see the contract, they can read it, and if they understand it, or if it's somehow signed by someone who understood it, then they should be able to determine that if they send Ether there, then they get the tokens.
I think that's a decentralized exchange, because, well, the contract is an escrow, right?
Yeah. And it's possible to check that this escrow does what I say it does.
Yeah. So that's not a problem, but still it's a problem. It would be a problem for the majority, because what I discovered, so just to summarize, I discovered that there are two different strategies. One, you're trying to be a true mad scientist and design a token and have a team and write code. And another one, actually, you don't necessarily need to be a scam, but you just don't do this shit. You just raise money first and then you do work. So you just throw 50 to 100K into marketing, and that's it. And then the second thing I discovered, as a naive person, that majority of people, they didn't read your paper, they didn't read your THC.
Well, even if they read it, they might not understand it.
And they actually don't give a shit. And it's really sad, because I'm thinking, like, for instance, when you interact with this contract, you obviously, when you send money from your wallet, when you have a key, the private key for your Ethereum wallet, then you're going to get the token balance. But what if your Ether is in Poloniex? Then you send you just press the button and they send you Ether to the contract.
Do they do that? Is it a service that Poloniex does? Or
no,
do
no, it's not a service. It's like an enormous amount of people. Yeah, enormous amounts of people hold the Ether in exchange. Mm-hmm. In exchanges like Poloniex, Kraken, and what have you. And the problem is that when they send Ether to the crowdfunding contract, ours or any other, it's the exchange that receives it, a token.
Oh.
Because on the exchange, you don't own your private key.
Yeah, okay. So what happens then?
What happens then is that they write you a sad email about, please, can you send me my tokens? It's just, no, dude. It's automatic. We just
you have them already.
Well, exchange has it, so please write to the exchange. And the weird
thing what I meant is, what do the exchanges do then when the people come and say, please give me my tokens?
Well, I heard stories that exchanges might sometimes, because they have a proof that this ether, this particular ether, this exchange can give you your tokens, but they don't have to.
Okay.
Because also, I have a conspiracy theory. If exchanges were really careful about not to...
Too involved.
They could just block these contracts because, like, every week there's a bunch of ICOs and they could... I mean, you're working for an exchange, right? You know...
Can detect contracts.
They know... They also know all the ICOs and all the crowd sales because they were the ones... They would be the ones to list them because that's how they make money.
They don't necessarily know about it.
Well, because people start writing to them straight away when someone announces a token sale.
I don't think... I mean, I also don't know how such an exchange works, but I think it's not that many people that work there. And they just don't have the enough people to watch every token. And if they can't detect that this is an ERC-20 contract, which they probably can because they can look which functions it implements. So if they can't solve this with a technical solution, there's no way that they have enough people to list and find all the possible addresses that are not addresses of private
people. I'm not saying all of them. I'm saying big crowd sales. I'm saying like there was like Bancor or Basic Attention Token or Golem or whatever.
Well, maybe they did and this didn't happen with those tokens. Maybe it just happened with yours.
Well, maybe it's a wave of mainstream people who don't understand how this stuff works. But the weird thing is, my conspiracy theory is that exchanges just end up with shitloads of tokens, and this is a good thing.
Yeah, if nobody asks for them, they can keep them.
And even if people ask for them, they would turn around and say, well, no.
Well, I mean, they then would get very bad press.
Oh, what I should do, I should just send some Ether to myself, to my company's crowdfunding token sale contract, from Poloniex.
Mm-hmm. And just sue them.
And then sue them. Yeah, I'm going to get rich. No, it's actually... Well,
no, I think it would be a really bad idea for them to keep the tokens if people ask for them. They need to find a solution for that because otherwise they will get really bad press. And I think they do care about bad press because this looks like embezzlement to me if they keep them, if people ask for their tokens.
They could have blocked as well big crowd sales, famous crowd sales.
They definitely should block these. And I think when they feel the need to block them, they will do it.
So we need another guest. We need someone who works at an exchange.
Yeah, and also I have another bit of news. There was one contract, I forgot the token name, but apparently their website was hacked and somebody replaced the contract address with their own.
Oh, I'm going to tell you a huge story about that. I totally forgot.
And they received 7 point something million worth in Ether on this address. So
7 point.
Yeah, I think it was $7 million dollar worth of Ether.
That's like well done.
Yeah, well hacked.
Yeah.
Okay, so your story.
So anyway, what I discovered, I think I was quite a lot at in Slack channels of different token sales.
Oh, myetherwallet.com? No, that's also
that's
something
also,
we can discuss that later.
Yeah. So anyway, what started yeah. happening when we launched a token sale is that the same day the Slack channel just got swarmed by people who's like, not the same day we launched, before we launched, because people are sitting there waiting and everyone thinking that we're going to sell out like hot buns, which didn't happen because the cap was quite high. So what happened is, like, one day you just have people with obscure names, like they will have a name of your company or something like that. Yeah, so they yeah. swarm your Slack.
Yeah.
Another day there was...
And then they would lie to people. Or
and
what?
they just say, hello, I'm like a CTO of company so and so. We just decided to publish a contract address specifically to our community.
Ooh.
And what they do, another day what they did, they took pictures from the website of a lot of like staff who works there, created like fake accounts and just swarmed Slack channel.
Wow.
But what was good that people who actually were there, like, I don't know, community,
yeah.
they totally saw it. Like, yeah. not so many people actually got scammed because somehow in this channel there were a lot of, like, old school altcoin token people. So yeah. they were like, scam, ban. And another day someone hacked a bot. So the Slack bot has a vulnerability. If you can hack someone's, you can possess... someone's Slack bot, even an admin can't fucking stop this bot anymore. Because yeah. it's impossible. I mean, we didn't find a way to actually disable a bot because it just kept coming back and it would send people DMs saying...
Nobody hacked the bot. The bot was the hack. That's what you're saying.
No,
somebody wrote a bot. So you
have... There was a Slack bot. It's like a normal script that just does stupid things that you can program in Slack.
Yeah.
It will say, hello, like, if you say, I don't know, Berlin in a sentence, and then the Slack bot gonna say, oh, Berlin is awesome, or something stupid, right? So someone who was in the Slack channel,
somehow... In the team? First you have to be in the team.
I don't know how it happened, but someone...
So there's one account that's called Slackbot.
Yes.
You're talking about this account. You are not talking about a third-party API using a program. You're talking about Slackbot?
Maybe it was a clone of a Slackbot that looked exactly like the stupid Slackbot that would send people DMs, and we absolutely couldn't disable it, so we had to close Slack for a while.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is the fact that you can have and you can use the API of Slack to send direct messages to people.
Yeah, so...
And the admin cannot stop these direct messages. That's what I also heard. But this is not a hack that your Slack team was hacked or that one of your bots was hacked or that one of your integrations. It's just an API access. They have an account in your Slack and they get an API token from Slack for this user.
So
as this user, they automatically send DMs to other users.
But I didn't understand that because I think the DMs were actually coming from the Slack bot, but maybe they just created...
Okay, that's how I understand it. And what you can't do is, I mean, what you can do is you can ban the user behind this, as I understand it. I mean, it would be really stupid if Slack wouldn't allow banning users. As an admin, you can ban users, right?
Yes.
I would be really surprised.
We banned and blocked a lot of users, but sometimes...
Well, they can just make a new account.
They just come in swarms. So
yeah, they just make a new account because you have automatic sign up, right?
Yes, so they
because
come in swarms.
Otherwise it's not handle non-automatic sign ups. So
actually I could find out, but maybe it wasn't Slackbot, maybe it was some Slackbot with like zero instead of O with the same icon
something
like that.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, I also got, and what's really annoying, and I gave feedback to Slack about this, is they can send you URLs that look different from what they point to.
Mm.
So that's why I mentioned this My Ether Wallet scam.
Oh, yeah, it's still going on in many channels. Yeah.
So I got a personal message from someone, random, totally, I mean,
Yeah.
Totally doesn't matter. And they sent me like a message, my etherwallet.com, my etherwallet.com was compromised. You should definitely go to this link. And it was blue, like a link, right? And it said my etherwallet.com. But when I clicked on it, it was a different domain.
Well, and you clicked on it. Because you're not paranoid enough.
No, because I don't have my Etherwallet account at all.
Ah.
No, actually, I didn't click on it immediately because you can open this in a web browser and then you see where it goes to. You see that it goes to myetherwallet.com.im/lockmeinid, something, whatever.
Since we like segued into scams, but I can even read out this.
You cannot do that in Slack. So I gave feedback to the Slack people and asked them to make it possible that you see the real URL, because normal users can't send you URLs that look different from where they point to. It's only possible via the API, and that's definitely a security problem.
Because I had like in one Slack I used to frequent, I get messages like this. To all Ethereum holders, due to the increasing number of phishing attacks and holders' requests from the Ethereum network, we decided to implement two-factor authentication to all Ethereum wallets.
I get this too.
And then it's like, because people heard about scams, and then they would be
probably
like...
Probably click on this.
Yeah. And then another one was, we are happy to announce that we are running a new bounty campaign. For every Ether in your My Ether wallet, you will receive... 0. Ether free. So, okay, the first one was a bit smarter. And then another one I have. It's the same one. Due to the increasing number of phishing attacks.
So my Ether wallet users are really under attack right now.
And then, so I have, in just one Slack, I have 1, 2, 3, 4 DMs. And one says, please be advised that we are experiencing some errors with the Ethereum-based token smart contract, blah. And that's also myetherwallet.com, wallet.info. So it's just like totally this poorer my Ether wallet because everyone is using it.
Is that so?
I mean, it's the easiest way to buy tokens on during a crowd sale.
Ah, okay.
So you really don't have to install anything.
Because they don't go to the exchange, but they really go to your
the easiest way to... The easiest way to make an Ethereum wallet without any Mist or Parity or Geth or whatever is my Ether wallet.
Yeah, we should really tell our listeners, please don't use a web wallet.
Yeah, but I mean...
please install Mist. No, it's not called Mist anymore. It's called Ether Wallet, I think.
Or MetaMask or whatever. I don't know how secure that is, but it's still better than... But I have to say that I was recommending people to use my Ether wallet because it's better than an exchange. You still can...
Yeah, because you get the token. But my Ether wallet, still, they hold the secret keys.
No.
No?
You just save it as like JSON file or something.
Because apparently with the password, you can get to the keys. Are you sure my Ether wallet is not keeping your keys? I mean, okay, you can download them, but they have them also.
They probably have them.
Yeah, okay, that's the problem. Because.
But why would they have them?
To use them? To make transactions?
Yeah, but they don't need to have them.
Well, if you want to buy tokens, you have to create a transaction.
Yes, but you can keep it on your machine and then sign a transaction, right?
Okay, we don't know enough about my Ether wallet.
Yeah, now we need to invite someone.
Apparently, when I said have the keys not only protected by a password, I think they have them, even if you say they don't need them, because with a password, everybody else gets them. So these scammers work because you log into a different website, like myetherwallet.com.im.
And
you log in there, and then they have their password.
Upload your keys there.
No, they have your password, and with your password and your username, they get the keys from the myetherwallet.com website.
Okay, well, we need to double check that because, as far as I'm concerned. I still have some tokens on my Ether wallet. where you just upload your key and then you upload your wallet and then it's...
Well, do you upload your secret key? That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but why would they keep it? Yeah.
Why would you upload it if they don't need to keep it?
You upload it and then every time you need to use your MyEther wallet, you need to upload your private key.
No, you just said you upload them in advance.
No, you open myetherwallet.com. Then you press a button, send or receive tokens. It says, what would you like to use? And I would upload like some JSON file with a bunch of tokens in them. I mean, it's a private key with a bunch of like tokens on them.
So the file you upload contains a secret key.
Yes. But then I have to upload it every time. So it is not secure. It's a crappy wallet. It's just practical. And then I always thought, well, if I have, I don't know, 3 shitcoins on it and half an ether, then it's not really...
Actually, maybe I'm wrong because they warn here, please beware of phishing websites. Do not enter your key on a website you arrived at by clicking a link. Use bookmarks, always triple check the domain, ours is blah blah blah.
That I don't know but how
they,
secure
but
they are.
But they said in the street, they said, don't enter your password. So why would I even need a password for this website if behind the password there are no keys?
I don't know. But because
apparently you upload your key to them and they promise you that they don't keep it.
Well, then you have to trust them. Yeah. So every time you upload...
I don't know what's worse, to have a password and know that they keep my keys or to upload the keys and not know whether they keep them. Okay, apparently I don't know enough about my Ether wallet, but... Anyway, I know enough to not use it.
Yeah, but it's still...
So what's the problem with a program called Ether Wallet on your computer?
There is no problem having a program.
Okay.
But still, people would still send tokens from exchanges.
Yeah, okay.
So my Ether Wallet is kind
better,
of...
It's better than that.
It's so... That's why I was disappointed with sort of the demographic of token holders, because it's not like people just would throw a couple of ethers at you and just jokingly. They would actually send a lot of ether from an exchange.
Yeah.
And it's actually said in on our website in big letters and terms and conditions, and please do not send from an exchange.
Yeah.
So it means people really don't read it. And we actually try to keep it short, so.
And why can't you blacklist the addresses of exchanges because you don't know them?
Actually, that's something that we should have done probably, because it's probably possible. Hmm. But then
maybe exchanges announce their addresses, but you have to update these addresses in your contract probably, because they also generate new addresses.
That we don't know. But that's a good thing to research actually.
Yeah.
But then again, if let's say we will start, or anyone who issues tokens will start to add these bells and whistles, because you try to keep this contract as simple as possible.
Yeah, yeah,
because more you have weird bells and whistles there, more there is a possibility to exploit it, right? And
well, in this case, it's definitely more expensive to keep all these addresses and to initially set them up. And also to have the code that checks blacklisted addresses, yeah.
So every time the transaction will come from an address, like blacklisted, non-blacklisted, the contract will need to call some kind of a registry with a bunch of addresses and say, oh, is this blacklisted address or not? So that's going to be more gas, I guess, for each transaction.
Yeah, it's more expensive, definitely.
So it's already like with all these bells and whistles that it in 10 days it's supposed to price going to change and then...
Okay, so you say the exchanges should fix this, and I don't know what they say, but...
Yeah, but for an exchange, it's just a question of blocking one like one or two addresses, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think people have fixed their brains, to be honest, because I'm just getting so tired of, like, I'm sorry, idiots. It's like you're not walking around with, I don't know, carrying 1,000 euros in a pocket with holes in it,
yeah,
right?
Just don't buy tokens, please.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it's like people, now there are waves and waves of mainstream people coming in, and they really don't give a shit about technology. They, and then they're going to cry and complain about, first of all, buying scam coins and buying into Ponzi schemes and buying into, like, bad stuff.
I mean, the only thing that helps that I can see is regulations. I mean, there must... I think this is the Wild Wild West right now, and people get scammed, and you can say, okay, they get scammed because they are stupid, but I think, I mean, we both know about this, and I think there's a lot of people who are not stupid in general, but are just ignorant about these details, and they should be protected.
Well, I don't know. I have a different opinion because I almost think that this kind of...
They have to burn?
Well, people don't walk around wearing helmets outdoors, right? But it's a lot of people actually fall over and die because they hit their head in the shower or something. It's very common. So if you will start completely over-regulating that, then greedy people will, like, still go, and they're gonna get complete scams because
they think they are protected and then they are not.
Well, what happens when people, like, ban prostitution? Then it just gets under. What happens when someone bans drugs and it becomes illegal, right, or heavily regulated? Well, you get mafia, you get cartels, you get a lot of people.
But on the other hand, if you have no regulation at all, as it is right now, you also hurt a lot of people. And that's in itself is maybe not a problem. But if that happens, if a lot of people get scammed, then the whole system gets a bad reputation. And then the whole system will be seen as something, if not illegal, then at least very risky, and then you will not have mass adoption.
Yeah, but I think it should be maybe there should be some kind of regulations. I mean, obviously, but it's almost like I'm, for instance, I'm pro PADI, the scuba certification. So you get a scuba diver certification, and you learn a lot about how to dive safely, and not very many PADI certified divers actually get hurt. It's like super rare. But before this PADI was popular, I went to... before it was popular, I was too young to go diving, but I went diving in Egypt once, and there is this place called Blue Hole or something like that. And So a lot of people went there diving before this PADI certification existed. And the whole thing... The whole blue hole, you just plates with names who died there. So you just descend, you want to have fun and beautiful fish and whatever, and all you see is just names of dead people who died there. And you just don't want to dive anymore. But all these people, they were just amateur divers with the crappy equipment who didn't have any training. And they died.
Yeah. So for driving cars, we have a license in Germany that you have to have.
Yeah, and still
and
a lot
for,
of people die.
For buying coins, you think there should also be some kind of license before? I mean,
maybe
that is
there
impossible.
Should be a license to actually buy coins, not to sell coins. Because I never thought about it. Because the thing is, I really don't want this space to be regulated. Because I think we're coming to an age where we're really democratizing money. And right now it's a lot of scams. But if you really think about it, it's about making money more democratic and actually democratizing printing money. If everyone can print money, maybe the economy going to look completely differently. It's just like right now a lot of scams printing money as well. So maybe it's
yeah,
not...
Yeah, with freedom comes responsibility. I mean...
But maybe it's not the money printers who have to be responsible, but maybe
the money
it's
buyers.
Money buyers.
Yeah, it's totally unrealistic to have... I mean, you will also not have a license for using the internet.
No.
Like a internet driver's license. It will just... Will
internet
not happen.
Surfer's license.
I mean, maybe we just have to go through this period of people being scammed left and right... And let's hope that not the technology like Ethereum, it in general gets the bad it will get a bad reputation by
somehow,
with certain people.
Somehow states and banks, I mean, look at what happened or happens every, I don't know, 10, 15 years with banks and states and stuff. And
bailouts, yeah.
And yet... They still allow to exist, and no one regulated banks and states out of existence, right?
But they are heavily regulated, especially, I mean, I think they are. I have no idea if they really are. But especially after the last, I think the 2008
crisis,
I think they are not allowed to sell people stuff that they know they can't afford. I mean... At least this part has been more regulated. I don't know if it's effective. Anyway,
Yeah, but I don't know what this
Maybe we just have to go through this phase of people getting scammed left and right and then some kind of instinct to survive. Survival instinct will emerge within the people and they will just find out.
I just don't believe that any even very, very decent state institution can come up with good regulations to regulate money. Mm. Because as far as state's concerned and all these people in financial institutions, it's just like there is no room for innovation anymore. I mean, they will try to protect people, but
it will limit the innovation.
Because I'm really skeptical about it. I try not to shit on people or institutions or whatever, or find, you know, bad state or people or bad corporates and stuff. I saw what it's like, what is called innovation funding. There is this, like, Horizon 2020 or blah, 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 and it's like money spent on innovation.
Money 2020?
Money 2020? No, sorry,
conference.
Horizon 2020.
Yeah, okay.
Is a bunch of money, I guess it's taxpayers' money or whatever. It's just a bunch of money that European something institution gives out so that people
program.
Can innovate. Yeah. And it's like, if you really saw how this machine that's supposed to support innovation is running, it's incredibly, I mean, you have to be bureaucrat 2.0 to be able to even get your head around their system.
Yeah, usually companies have to hire other companies to file the application for European Commission, European Union money.
Yeah, so
money.
It's a whole industry. Like there are universities and universities. The weird thing is like I've been told by someone, if you want to apply for this type of funding, you need to have a partnership with a university who got this funding before. And I'm just like, well, if I'm giving, like, I don't know, candy to kids, the kid who already got one, well, he's not getting one, right? No, but a kid who actually regularly get a candy, you're going to get one more and then just get hooked on it. And in this university, there are special people who just monitor all this funding, and all they do, they get paid salary to just fill in forms to apply for innovation and stuff, money. Maybe. And I'm just like, seriously. And I also went to a conference which is called Digital Futures or something in Brussels. It's about innovating internet and creating digital markets. And it's like being in a museum. I mean, seriously, they're building software no one needs and no one can use. And then, actually, I came across one funding application when I was still naive enough to think that maybe it's something interesting. So I came across a funding application where they would give you money if you promise to take their shitty software and use it in some kind of system. Because they build something and they no one wanted, it's some framework or whatever, and then there are some, I don't know, frameworks that people just build open source, whatever, because it's fun. So some bunch of universities build this kind of weird shit. And then the year later, they have a funding round, and they give you money just to take this shit and use it. And this is just not, I mean, this is just ridiculous. And there are bright, nice, great people working in these institutions. They just stuck in this machinery of complete nonsensicality.
So I think we are deviating from our subject.
Yeah, so anyway, coming back to the subject, if you can actually allow people to raise money from speculators and people who just buy tokens to build crazy software and to just don't work, like, the cool thing about printing your own money is that you don't have to worry about your revenue model. Because when you go to a VC or an angel, well, supposedly angels supposed to just give you money, and then if you fail, they don't care. They give money towards innovation. But any angel investor I spoke to, they ask you, what's your fucking revenue model and how much money you already
raised?
Sure, they
do their due diligence. I mean, they have to.
It's like no one ever just given money away to crazy scientists. So then on one hand, there is...
But with the token sale, now you get money without having this. And well, you think this is a good thing?
On one hand, there is... On one hand, there is public funding, like institutions and state funding and foundations, and they're going to make you jump through the loops. You just can't do any innovation with them because you're going to drown in paperwork. And on the other hand, there are VCs and angels, and you have to generate revenue. You have to, like...
Well, you have to show a promise of revenue.
Yes, or and then you have to generate it, or they, like, they're never going to give you a second round.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is... nothing in between. Like, universities and institutions and foundations, they might be not so progressive. So in this space, in this crazy Cambrian explosion soup, whatever, you really can get good technology, which, because, like, we don't have to care about revenue model anymore.
What do you mean by we?
I mean the company I work for.
Okay. Yeah, you have to
be specific. When people ask me, yeah, but how are you guys making money? You're taking a cut. I was like, well, we don't need to, right? We can just build open source software and just launch it, and then people can take it. And we can pay ourselves salaries and pay developers. And then when the money is over, hopefully the system is ready.
Well, in my experience, software is never done, but...
Well, at some point it starts working.
Yeah, maybe it's good enough to build on it and have someone else continue when you're out of money.
Software is never ready, but yeah, so by and large, I think everyone should be allowed to print their own money. And not because I worked with a project that already did, because I think if we really want to see true financial innovation, someone got to start printing money.
I think we are going in circles now.
Yes, that's true. So that's why next time we need to have more guests.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Okay. Goodbye.
Goodbye, dear listeners. And today I'm going to finish this very slowly because everyone tells me that I usually cut it off really brutally.